There's really no difference between a simulation for serious use, for say wargaming, for example, and a video game. It's all a discrete event simulation, if you will. It's just math.
Scalable virtual worlds. This is Future Lab, the online radio series from Intel Labs. I'm Jason Lopez. The U.S. military enlists the latest consumer gaming technologies to build the next generation of virtual training simulators. For many years, the military has been using much of the same gaming technology you see on the store shelves, only adapted for specific military situations. Lately, the Army has been experimenting with using virtual worlds to supplement its training, creating true-to-life battlefields on an open platform called Science Sim. Deirdre Kennedy has more.
If you were to sit in front of one of the U.S. Army's experimental training simulators, you might think you were looking at a popular video game like Stargate Atlantis or World of Tanks. That's because the military has been working with the same massively multiplayer online or MMO technologies those games were built on.
These technologies bring a number of different capabilities to the table, though.
Douglas Maxwell manages strategic applications at the U.S. Army's Simulation Training Technology Center in Florida.
For example, on the gaming side of the house, you end up with richer graphics normally. You end up with a social network in the newer games. You end up with a lot of capability that really haven't been folded into the traditional modeling and simulation, especially simulation for training community in the past. And so part of what we're doing is we're exploring these technologies to see if there's any value there to make them better or more effective.
The Army's Training and Doctrine Command asked Maxwell's group to come up with a new kind of trainer that would depict the operational environment as accurately as possible and be able to engage vast numbers of users at the same time.
They wanted to be able to create a simulation that could replicate not only something at the platoon level, say 30 people that would go in and say clear a few square blocks, but also replicate something at the town or regional level. And so you may have thousands of participants and thousands of vehicles and thousands of red forces and thousands of blue forces. And what we found is that there was really no system that had been created yet that could really support that requirement.
Video games can handle lots of players, but they don't have the accuracy and flexibility the Army needed. Most gaming avatars have superhuman powers to fly around and climb over obstacles with ease. But military avatars need to emulate real human capabilities, so the simulation has to factor in issues like fatigue. A soldier who's running up a hill carrying a 100-pound pack would start to slow down. Maxwell's group has been overwriting the source code in several different platforms to match the Army's calculations for issues like driving a vehicle in difficult terrain or visual impairment from bright daylight or total darkness, or even things like probability of kill.
If you're in a video game and you run into a room and you want to shoot a bad guy, the video game normally just allows you to shoot until hit points are subtracted and then the bad guy is killed. But in the real world, if the bad guy is armored and you shoot them in the center of the chest or center mass, you know, it may take a number of shots to even knock them down. Or if you get a sharpshooter that can run into a room and then shoot the bad guy in the head, whereas unarmored, then it would be one shot, one kill. And so those kinds of calculations need to be taken into account for inside our simulations.
The military also became an early investor and developer in Second Life's enterprise platform. It built out a significant amount of content, both in the public grid side and behind the firewall in the enterprise side. Maxwell's team built more than 96 regions with military scenarios, including a recreation of a skirmish that went wrong in northeastern Afghanistan. It also improved on Second Life's collapsible terrain feature.
At any random spot, you could just walk up and begin digging a hole or detonate a simulated improvised explosive device, and it would create a crater. That kind of capability is not typical in your normal video game these days. Also, the ability to create content inside the framework and modify and manipulate that content in real time while the simulation is running is also very unique and things that that we found very very attractive. Lastly, it had a scripting engine that was in it, which allowed you to script and create little programs, if you will, to affect behaviors of objects inside the world while it was running again.
But in 2010, Second Life's owner, Linden Lab, pulled the plug on its enterprise platform, leaving the military with a big problem: a lot of content with no platform to run it on. So Maxwell turned to a relatively new OpenSim platform called ScienceSim. Researchers at Intel Labs had developed ScienceSim to overcome one of its major drawbacks. Both ScienceSim and Second Life only performed well with fewer than 40 players. More than that, and the programs degraded and response time lagged. Using distributed scene graph technology, Intel senior engineer Mick Bowman and his team were able to create hundreds of fully realized high-resolution avatars that could interact at the same time.
In this case, we have about 800 people walking around in a city landscape.
Bowman and his colleague Dan Lake demonstrated a virtual city they built in ScienceSim in which players can experience the behavior of individuals and crowds in the case of a natural disaster or other emergency.
So what we can do is we can actually simulate an explosion that would happen in one corner of the park and watch the reaction of the avatars to that explosion. And what we see when the disaster happens, when something happens, all of the avatars start to move away from it. And we can actually see where sort of the contention points are as they move away.
This type of simulation is designed to give first responders a chance to test out different situations and outcomes, like which exit routes a crowd might run to, or what route emergency crews could use to reach the injured. In this particular demo, all of the pedestrians appear to act like extras in a video game, but each one is programmed to behave in a particular way.
In this case, each one of the avatars that we have has a very simple behavior. They have sort of a normal wandering behavior and a oops, something is blowing up somewhere and I need to get out of the way kind of behavior. And so we have those two programmed into the characters that are in the scene. The players of the game would be able to communicate with each of these avatars that are in there, agree on a particular location where they might be able to meet in order to, you know, find your family after that. And what we could add to the game is things like not all communication works. So when we have these problems, cell towers get overloaded. There are new barriers in place. There are large crowds, and trying to go against the crowd is very hard. And so those are the kinds of things that make the game challenging.
Maxwell's team have used that capability to build simulations like marketplaces, where civilians might be going about their workday or sitting chatting with friends when a device explodes or rocket fire breaks out. Using artificial intelligence, those avatars, along with suspected enemy avatars, are programmed to act like a person living in a particular part of the world would realistically behave. Intel researchers solved the problem of having huge numbers of players in the game simultaneously by changing the route through which each player logs in. Intel researcher Dan Lake.
So one of the biggest challenges we've had to overcome, and what the distributed scene graph that Mick mentioned allows us to do, is to get more clients connected in. The typical virtual world server is designed so that everybody connects into one common point, and then it handles all of the interactions between those clients, and it distributes all of the updates and scene state back to all of those clients. Well, what we've done is we've pulled apart that centralized server, and now we can run as many client management type servers as needed to support the client load. So in the demonstration we're showing today, we have 8 client management servers, each supporting 100 clients. Typically, the virtual worlds that you would find today are limited to about 100 or less clients. And so what we've been able to do is by running 8 client management servers and synchronizing them using this technology we've developed on the back end, we can support 800 clients, and we've had this as high as 1,500 clients in a different scenario.
By running off multiple servers in a cloud data center, the platform can model a number of separate simulations at the same time, such as gravity, collisions, and projectiles. So a soldier in a training could experience a virtual military operation from a number of different points of view. In the next few years, the Army is hoping to develop a virtual world that includes intelligent holograms and hyper-realistic avatars that can emulate precise facial expressions to teach soldiers the kind of skills they'll need to be the next generation of team leaders. For Future Lab, I'm Deirdre Kennedy.
That's our show for today. If you'd like to hear other Future Lab episodes, check them out on iTunes or at connectedsocialmedia.com. Intel Labs is at intel.com/research.